Hey, I'm Johanna Wagstaff.
And hi there, I'm Rohith Joseph.
And we're asking for 10 minutes of your day to go through the 10 things that the UN recommends we can all do when it comes to climate change.
Please don't leave.
No.
And also, the things aren't new.
We are just wired to not do them.
We promise you to help you figure out your brains, and you and your people can make better choices to combat climate change.
10 Minutes to Save the Planet is available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
This is World Report. Good morning, I'm John Northcott. Ontario is tightening its limits on cell phone use in schools. Education Minister Stephen Lecce announcing this morning that cell phones will be banned during all instructional time, and those who want to use their phones during breaks must be given permission by a teacher.
Our policy on cell phones is quite simple. The default this September, unless explicitly directed by their educator, for a child is out of sight, out of mind when it comes to cell phones in Ontario. The province is also requiring all publicly funded school boards to restrict access to social media on school networks and school devices so that schools are places of learning and the development of social and emotional and communication skills.
Lecce says it's all in an effort to help students with their mental health while keeping them focused in the classroom. The province is also banning all vaping devices from schools and school-related settings, joining cannabis, nicotine, and tobacco products. Israel's foreign minister says a ground assault on Rafah would be put off if a hostage deal is reached with Hamas. In an interview, Yisrael Katz says his country is willing to put its planned operation in the border city on hold. He says his country will do whatever it takes to get Israeli hostages released. And this morning, Hamas is telling Reuters news agency it will send a delegation to Cairo on Monday for ceasefire talks. Meanwhile, World Central Kitchen says it will be resuming its operations in Gaza tomorrow. The food aid organization had suspended work for weeks after seven of its staff members were killed in an Israeli airstrike on April 1st. The charity says it will be working with the Palestinian team to deliver food in Gaza. Students around the world are continuing to stage protests over the ongoing war in Gaza. An encampment has now been set up at Montreal's McGill University. Demonstrators say they want to show their solidarity with the Palestinian people. The CBC's Albert De La Tala joins me in studio. So, Albert, let's talk about the students at McGill. What are they asking for?
Students are demanding that McGill and Concordia universities divest from funds connected to Israel and also cut ties with Israeli academic institutions. They made reference to a data set published about a week ago by two student groups. It lists 50 companies that it says McGill invests in that are connected to the Israeli government. One protester explained why she felt it was important.
Our institutions are complicit in an ongoing genocide. Our tuition money is being used to invest in the corporations that are manufacturing the very weapons being used against the people of Gaza.
In terms of how long this could last, the Montreal chapter of the Palestinian Youth Movement called the encampment indefinite and said that it won't let universities, quote, be complicit in genocide. McGill told CBC in an email that it supports the rights of students for freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, as long as they follow university policy and the law.
Albert, we've certainly seen protests spreading across the United States. What's the latest there?
Yeah, so officials at Washington University, they say that more than 80 people were arrested yesterday amid ongoing demonstrations there. It said a group that also included employees and people not connected to the university, they marched at locations there, multiple locations, pitching tents and indicating they did not intend to leave. School officials say it quickly became clear the situation had the potential to get out of control and violated university policy, so they were told they needed to leave. One notable arrest there, presidential candidate Jill Stein. At last update, her communications director said they weren't aware of any charges for her.
Albert De La Tala joining us here in studio. Thanks, Albert.
Thank you.
In Berlin, a small group of Jewish activists marked Passover by holding a protest in front of the German parliament. Their message is for the government to stop military support for Israel. Freelance reporter Rebecca Collard has more.
A dozen or so Jews gather around a long table in front of the German parliament, surrounded by Palestinian flags, activists, and German police. This is what's often called a Freedom Seder, a tradition that has its roots in the American civil rights movement.
Our liberation is not complete without the liberation of the Palestinians.
The Seder is part of a small but growing movement of Jews here that disagree with German policy. Emily, who didn't want to give her last name, grew up in a religious home and helped lead the Seder.
Our community is used to justify sending weapons to carry out the ongoing genocide that we see in Gaza.
Udi Raz is an Israeli activist who has been detained by German police.
What they are protecting is only those Jews who are willing to reproduce anti-Muslim racism against the Palestinian people in Gaza.
A few days after the Seder, the protest camp was shut down by German police. Activists say it's a sign of growing repression here. Rebecca Collard for CBC News, Berlin.
As summer approaches in the Northwest Territories, it's facing drought conditions, and it's looking as though 2024 will be another year that's bad for fires. Residents want to know how the government is preparing, and on Saturday, people in Yellowknife got some answers to those questions. Sarah Kremlowski brings us more.
All the orange that's occurring here are actual...
At a local arena in Yellowknife, a city employee shows residents a map of the fire protections built in the capital last summer. At another booth, there's information on what to pack for an evacuation. The territory's held wildfire information sessions like this in the past, but this year is different. Because last summer, the 20,000-person city was evacuated for the first time because of a threatening fire.
I keep getting excited about summer, and then just the looming wildfires is always at the back of my brain, so I'm very nervous.
Residents like Amber Erasmus want to know how the government is preparing for wildfire season.
I'm just really hoping to see a lot more training, a lot more plans put in place, and a lot more transparency in those plans.
Ariel Whaley also said she wants to see more planning next wildfire season.
Sometimes it did feel a little disorganized in what was going on, which sometimes made me feel unsafe.
Last year, Yellowknife residents didn't get any information about evacuation procedures until it happened. But the city's revamping its emergency plan and conducting a review of last year's evacuation. Both will be published this June. The territory has also updated its emergency plan. It includes updating how a state of emergency should be declared and defining emergency management roles, from local officials all the way up to federal government. Whaley's glad they've made some changes.
It does feel good knowing that they have, I think they have a better plan.
She said she's feeling ready, no matter what happens. Sarah Kremlowski, CBC News, Yellowknife.
People in Alliston, Ontario, are welcoming an historic investment from Honda Canada. On Thursday, the automotive manufacturing giant announced billions of dollars for new electric vehicle plants. But that money is likely to have an impact well beyond the assembly line. Patrick Swadden has that story.
This is a very big day for the region, for the province, and for the country.
Prime Minister Justin Trudeau this week punctuating Honda's announcement that it will invest $15 billion to build four new electric vehicle plants in Ontario, two of them to be located at its current facility in Alliston, north of Toronto.
It's going to provide probably four generations of great-paying jobs.
That's Mayor Richard Norcross, who represents the area around Alliston. He says Honda has been a pillar of the community since the first Accord rolled off the assembly line in 1986. The new EV plant's expected to bring 1,000 new manufacturing jobs, but it's the knock-on effects that are rousing locals.
All of those jobs spawn new jobs and new businesses to support the operations at Honda.
Alliston BIA Chair Lachlan McGurk says he's excited but not taking anything for granted yet, after shutterings of automobile plants in St. Thomas and Oshawa left thousands out of work. While other locals like Margaret Ringland just want the investment to work for everyone.
Well, I hope that the jobs it creates it will create jobs for people right now that are really struggling in this area.
Many local municipalities are struggling to produce enough housing, and some say the region will need continued improvements to infrastructure. The new EV plants are projected to be operational by 2028. Patrick Swadden, CBC News, Toronto.
And finally,
my daddy's old car. I was born beneath that old lone star.
Not bad for an almost 91-year-old, eh? That's Made in Texas, a new single by country legend Willie Nelson. A cut from Get This, his 75th album of original material. The Redheaded Stranger will be celebrating his birthday tomorrow. He's had a busy few months making an appearance on Beyoncé's new Cowboy Carter album and preparing for a tour this summer. By the way, so far no Canadian dates on that tour, so you may have to go on the road again. Well, that is the latest national and international news from World Report. I'm John Northcott. This is CBC News.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.